Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And Eric, this is a podcast for two. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right, great. So we've gone a week since talking about the defensive side of the 53-man roster. And now we're moving on. We have a pile of mailbag questions. We got a nice backed up mailbag, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. But first, the league has been talking about, or not the league has been talking about, there's going to be a roster expansion this season. Instead of a 53-man roster, we're going to have a 55-man roster. But there's a lot of caveats that go with it, so I want you to break it all down for everybody.
Yeah, basically, people are getting hung up on that 55 number, and it's important that they understand the context at which that is applied. The first thing is that there's going to only be 53 players that are on the everyday roster, and that's the same as it's always been. You're going to have 53 players that have a 17-week contract, and then each week, every team in the NFL will have the opportunity to promote two players from the practice squad to the regular act, what they call the active roster. So those 53 guys are on the active roster. And then every week, two guys from the practice squad can be promoted to the active roster, giving them a total of 55 players. But at the end of that week, so after the game is over that week, the players will automatically revert back to the practice squad. They don't get to stick around on the active roster longer than that. Now, once you have promoted a player to the active roster one time, they revert back to your practice squad without having to go through waivers. You can then do it a second time, and they can go right back to your roster squad without having to clear waivers. But if you promote a practice squad player a third time, they are now subject to waivers where another team can then claim them from you and basically steal them away. So when we say that there's going to be up to 55 players on the roster, that's true. But with only a certain amount of players available and limitations on how many times they can be promoted, it's really a 53-man roster, and then they can have up to two players more if they feel they need it in a given week. There's going to be weeks when no one is promoted, when they just have their 53 and that's it, and they're not even going to bother promoting a practice squad guy. The only reason they would promote a practice squad guy would be if they have an injury where they don't want to place a guy like on IR. So like, let's say you've got an injury to an offensive lineman. Well, you can promote a practice squad guy as like an emergency type offensive lineman, and then he can revert back. And then next week you can promote another one kind of in an emergency capacity while that offensive lineman is healing. So that's really what its intention is. It's an intention is to allow you to be able to overcome injury situations during the season without having to place guys on IR. So get 55 out of your head. It's still going to be 53. The 55 part is just, it's just a little trick that teams can use to help them through injury situations. Now, speaking of the practice squad, there historically has been 10 players on the practice squad over the last several years. Well, they're promoting that to 12. Okay, so now instead of 10, which was the rule last year, now have 12 guys on the practice squad that they can promote. So they're going to get another two players that they can use. Now, 10 of those players are still going to have less than 2 years of accrued seasons, but the two other players can have any capacity at all. So if a player has 4 or 5 years in the league, but no one's offering them a free agent contract, they may sign onto a practice squad, and teams can sign up to two of those veterans in those 12 spots. 2 years from now, it's going to go up to 14, and instead of it just being two veterans, it's going to be four veterans. So the practice squad is expanding, and it can be utilized to help your everyday roster, but at the end of the day, it's still going to be 53 players on the active roster that teams are going to go into on a week-to-week basis.
Man, it's going to look like a college sideline within a few years, except for half the guys won't be dressed. You know, you'll have a practice squad the size of the main roster, and that just none of them are dressed.
there's two other quick notes that I want to add into this just for context. One, you have to have 8 offensive linemen active on your active roster. So that means not on injured reserve. You have to have 8 of them available. Now, if one of them's injured and 7 are available, the 8th one still counts, but you have to have 8 players, 8 offensive linemen on your active roster.
On the 53 man.
On the 53. If you do not have 8, you are not allowed to promote a practice squad player. Okay.
Oh, so they figured a lot of teams would have just had 6.
Correct.
And just kept promoting 2 guys every week. Because the bottom 2 yep. guys that aren't active usually don't play as far correct. As offensive linemen go.
So it'll be interesting to see how that the teams adjust to that. Like the Lions have kept 9 offensive linemen recently. Well, now with this whole emergency offensive lineman, they may only keep 8. And then that allows them a practice squad or that allows them a roster spot that can go somewhere else. And that way that 9th, for example, last year with Bo Benchowl, instead of him being on the active roster every week, but then inactive, they could have just kept him on the practice squad, given him a higher salary to keep him on the practice squad. And then they could have just kept him around there instead of having to use a roster spot. Then that roster spot could have gone to somebody else, another player. So that's one of the little tricks. The other one is, they typically have to account for 7 players from the active roster as inactive on game day. Now they only have to do it for 6 guys. Now, if you add a practice squad guy up, then that's you have to take another guy off to account as well. But they can now have 46 active players on game day instead of 45, which was the past. So that's, again, another body that they can have in uniform on the sideline.
Can they still have the 3rd quarterback and push the roster to 47, or is that gone?
No, that's still in play as well.
Right, so they can go to 47 if they have a 3rd quarterback.
That's my understanding. Now, there's still some technical stuff from the CBA that hasn't come out, but I've checked with people. I've checked with other writers like Jeremy Reisman from Pride of Detroit. We've looked at over all the details and the information that's out there. And this is the best information that we can gather at this time. We don't know if there's going to be something else that comes up that wasn't originally part of the original CBA publication. But from what we know, that's the gist of everything that, that we've got out there, all the big changes that Lions fans want to know about.
So, you know, now the Lions have the ability to not keep 9 offensive linemen, only keep 8 offensive yeah. lineman on the 53-man roster. Is that one available roster spot going to go to Jamal Agnew playing wide receiver and another defensive back will be kept on the other side of the ball instead?
Well, this takes us right to our first question, right?
Yep, first question from Brandon Kerr. The biggest question, of course, is about Agnew. How does this position shift what you were thinking on him in regards to the 53? And if he makes it, who goes to the practice squad?
So I wrote an article about Agnew switching positions to wide receiver. And I discussed in there what I thought the fallout would be of the 53 man. And essentially the conclusion I came to was, if he's coming over to the offensive side of the ball, they're going to use him as like an offensive weapon. And when you look at the roles that I had assigned on offense, there was one guy that was only an offensive weapon, and that was Hunter Bryant, the 4th tight end. And so if Jamal Agnew is going to be that kind of gadget offensive weapon guy, that's probably going to bump Hunter Bryant to the practice squad. And then in turn, that would open up a spot on defense. And I gave that to CJ Moore, the guy who I said last week that I desperately wanted to get in but couldn't figure out a way. Well, this is the way. So Agnew switches over, bumps Hunter Bryant, CJ Moore promoted. And I don't think Agnew's necessarily a foregone conclusion, but the value that he brings on special teams, I think is going to put him in on the roster. And it could very easily come at the expense of the unproven rookie.
This is a very unimportant question, but did he change numbers yet?
No, and he wouldn't. I doubt he will anytime soon. They don't have to announce him as making a position shift. Basically, they can say he did, but they don't necessarily have to. They can still call him whatever they want. But if the league is looking at him and saying, hey, he only played on offense and special teams, you got to switch his number, then the Lions will have to do that. But Killebrew has been playing linebacker for 2 years now, and he still wears a safety's number because that's what he came in the league with, and the Lions still call him a safety, even though he hasn't played safety in over 2 years.
All right. Very unimportant question, but had to be asked nonetheless. All right. Moving on to Tyler Roerke, or Roke. People seem to write Marvin Jones off pretty quickly. I feel that he is a load of talent and can be a dark horse this year if he can stay healthy. Do you feel Marvin should be on the team for the foreseeable future? Obviously, Kenny Golladay needs to be paid and held on to.
So the big question with Marvin will just come down to money, right? He is the second best wide receiver on this team. I don't think there's any question he belongs on the roster and in the starting role for this year. But it's going to come down to price after 2020. If he wants to make what he's making now, which is a pretty high cap hit of just over $9 million, if he wants to try and recoup that level in that $7, $8, $9 million range, I don't know if the Lions are going to pay that. And quite frankly, unless you're a number one, there's not a lot of teams that are going to want to pay that out there either. He might have to take a loss in his future contracts. And if that's the case and the price comes down, yeah, I think there's a future for him on this team because he plays a role that is important in this scheme. He has a way of winning contested catches. He can be a vertical threat. He has proven that he can be like, not necessarily a number one, but maybe like a 1B. And he provides a nice veteran safety blanket for Matthew Stafford. Now, as Tyler mentioned, there are injury issues here, which are also going to drive his price down a little bit. But
only played 13 games in 2019 and 9 in 2018.
And so that's going to hurt him as well. So if you tell me he's willing to accept $5 million a year, yeah, there could be a future here for him. But if he wants $7 million, I think the Lions are probably going to look elsewhere.
All right, moving on to Tim from Germany. What do the Lions expect from TJ Hockenson in year two?
I think big steps, right? I would hope they are expecting big steps from him. He basically hit the average for what a rookie tight end has done before he went on IR. So he did it in less games. So
32 receptions for 367 yards and two touchdowns.
And I think the average is like 30 and like, I don't know, like 50 yards less or something like that. So he's right. He basically was average, but you didn't draft him at 8 to be average. You're going to want him to be more. And I think they're hoping he can make that next level step this year. So do I dare say that should double? You know what I mean? I don't know if saying that should double is unfair, but
no, it's not unfair. He really has to improve going into year two. They did spend a very high draft pick on him. He needs to be a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think, 1,000 or 1,200 yards is unrealistic, but I think 60 catches is doable. And even if it's 60 and 900, that's still doable. And those touchdowns should go up and closer into that 5-6 range as well. And if it's more than that, that's even better. But yeah, I think his numbers should definitely see a nice increase. The trust level with Stafford should go up. They kind of know what Jesse James is, right? And so you might put more responsibility on Hockenson as well. So I think the expectations will be high for him.
All right, moving on to Sean Sweeney. Is there room for both Isaac Nauta and Hunter Bryant on this roster? You kind of already answered that one.
I kind of did, but I'm gonna circle back here and say there is, if the Lions start playing around with their offensive line. Instead of keeping nine offensive linemen, if they're only going to keep eight because of this whole you can bring a guy up situation, they could go to a skill player. And if you've already got six wide receivers and five running backs, they might take a fourth tight end. So it's really going to hinge on offensive linemen and how many skill players at each position, but it's possible. Yeah, I'm not ruling it out because, again, I think Hunter Bryan is talented enough to play, and he can be an offensive weapon if used properly, but he's a fringe guy. I mean, so it's possible, yes.
Do you know, this is once again, unimportant information. Do you know who holds the rookie record for most receiving yards in a rookie campaign for a tight end?
Kelsey?
No, he's not. I don't even see him on this list. In 1961, Mike Ditka caught 56 passes for 1,076 yards and 12 touchdowns.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Good old Mike.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Brian. What is your confidence in Fraley stepping up to a huge role in drawing up the pass and blocking concepts with this new addition of running backs and offensive line, being that we have so many uncertainties with personnel packages?
I'm pretty confident that he's going to be okay. I mean, everything that I've heard behind the scenes is he's been waiting for a job like this for a couple of years. He's got loads of NFL experience as a player, which is going to go a long way. I think he's going to bring in a expanded blocking scheme, which we talked about when we addressed the fact that Jonah Jackson and Stenberg bring more power elements to their blocking concepts. And so I do think that there's going to be an expansion. It's going to take some time for the offensive lineman to gel, and that'll be up to Hank Fraley to get that done. But I do expect an expansion, and I do have confidence in him. It's not like this is while it is his first time as an offensive line coach, like as a high capacity level job, this is something that, you know, we've been told this was going to happen for a couple of years now. So I've kind of been preparing myself for it, and I'm not at all surprised that he got the promotion.
All right. John Gillenwater has a Frank Ragnow question. Do you think Ragnow has played up to or exceeded his draft position?
Excuse me. I think he's exceeded it. At one point he was the top center in the league for a good portion of the season, finished third or fifth or something like that in PFF's rankings. You know, when you draft a center in the first round, you want him to be in that top 10, hopefully top five. And he has been. And I think he's been if he's been better than top five, which he was most of last year. Yeah. I think that's exceeding those expectations, especially the fact that this was his first year at center. You know, like while he played his split his career between guard and center at Arkansas, he was a guard in 2018. So yeah, I think he showed a lot of what he can do. He was dominant at times last year, and he is arguably your best offensive lineman. And if he's that, then yeah, give me exceeded. I don't know how you land on that.
I would say he's played. He hasn't. I don't think he's exceeded his draft position. I guess the comparable that sits in my head, and now this is an old comparable, is Alex Mack, the former center for both the Falcons Browns. And the Browns. Yeah. And when he was drafted, roughly the same position as Ragnow, but he came into the league as a center. He didn't play guard first, and he made a Pro Bowl in year two. Now, what were his PFF grades that year? I'm not so sure. It's great that Ragnow is, came in ranking, would you say, third, according to PFF this past season. And he was, what's that?
I was going to say he was first for a really long
first.
Time.
And
then he ended up being third or fifth by the end. But
I don't know. I'll feel good that he's exceeding expectations. He's got to start making Pro Bowls on top of having high PFF scores. You know, he's got to have the validation in both aspects.
You know, the only thing I think that kept him from a Pro Bowl last year is the Lions' record, to be honest with you. When you're on a three-win team, the chances of you making a Pro Bowl are pretty slim, especially for a lineman.
Sure. I it's easier for a star position player.
Mm-hmm.
If they're playing on a bad team. All right, Colin Guy's question. If week one was today, who's starting along the defensive line in the Ashawn spot next to Shelton?
I think it's Deshaun Hand. And while I say it's Deshaun Hand, it's because I think his ceiling is high. And I don't want to get too much into that because we have another question about him next. But I think Deshaun Hand is the starter. If you're asking me who plays more like Ashawn, then it's probably Nick Williams that's more like Ashawn. But I think Hand is the guy who's starting. If it started today, he'd be the starter.
All right, MSU Lions fans question. If healthy, how good do you think Deshaun Hand could be this year? Is he as good as everyone remembers him? Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a good start to his career.
Yeah, and I don't know how good he is right now because we haven't seen him, right? But what I saw last year in spring camp and then in fall camp, his trajectory was very high. And the stuff that they were having him do was just rare stuff for a 300-pound lineman. And my expectations are for him to come in and still be able to be a dominating force because of the athleticism that he has and the way that they want to utilize him. I think he can definitely regain that impactfulness. The way that they address the defensive line by only adding Nick Williams at his spot and then drafting Cornell late, but only bringing in Nick Williams tells me that they believe he's going to return to form as well.
All right, Big Eastern Syndicate asks, what are the odds of the Lions re-signing Mike Daniels?
Boy, it sure looks good, right? I think it makes a lot of sense. He's saying all the right things. You listen to him do interviews and he talks about how much he loved the locker room and how much he loved the coaches and how much he believed in the team and the schematics and just the mentality that they brought to the field every day. The only real discrepancy was he didn't like his playing time and that was hard to come by for him, partially due to the injury. So yeah, everything he says, it sure seems like he's a guy who's going to be back in Honolulu Blue this fall.
Will it be at a contract a little less expensive than what he signed for last year?
I hope so, and I hope it's incentive laden, right? You know, stay healthy, get more money, active on game days, get more money, produce sacks, get more money. You know, that's reasonable to expect, especially because it's not just last year. It was last year that he wasn't healthy with us, but it was the 2 years prior with the Packers he wasn't healthy either. So I think at this point in his career, the fact that he's not been signed indicates he's probably going to end up with an incentive-laden deal.
All right, Dan Reminap asks, any chance we improve pass rush soon? Gaping hole here. Gaping, I say.
Well, I mean, it sure looks like they've tried, right? You've altered your defensive interior with Sheldon, Penasini, and Williams trying to create more athleticism. Then you spent a third-round pick on Akwara. So, and then you're off the ball guys by bringing in Jamie Collins. All of these things are...
Well, they're little things. There's no big sudden movements there.
No, but collectively... they're all better, right? You're a little bit better in this spot. You're a little bit better in this spot. You're a little bit better in this spot. And collectively, it can make a difference. I think in addition to just from a talent standpoint, the linebackers that they have now and the way I believe they're going to want to use their linebackers now, you're going to be able to blitz guys from different spots. So you're going to be able to scheme some of that pressure in, which is something you couldn't do last year. Last year, these are the four guys we have, and there they go. And so it was kind of easy to predict, and it's one of the reasons why Kennard was so easily dispatched by offensive linemen was they knew he was coming. And now with the linebackers that they have, you're not going to be able to know exactly who the fourth rusher is or where they're coming from, or is it going to be five? And And so there's some adjustments and that the offensive lines are going to have to make. And that usually lends itself to a better pass rush. So yeah, I think there's opportunity for the pass rush to improve. I don't think they're going to be adding players that are going to like drastically improve the pass rush. I don't think Jadeveon Clowney is the guy that they're going to go out and sign, but there are other things that they've done to that should help them out.
All right. And speaking of who's the fourth or fifth man on the coming on the blitz, Grant Wickersham's question is, what percent of his snaps will Jared Davis play at Mike?
That's a great question. And I think before Jamie Collins, the concept would have been he's probably going to get 80% of his snaps at Mike. Now with Collins and we've talked about Jared Davis not showing positional fluidity in the past and having to show it now moving forward because it seems that's where the direction of the linebackers are going, I would say that number is going to be much lower. I'm going to say it's going to be closer to like 50% of his snaps would be at Mike, maybe even a little bit lower. His best spot, in my opinion, is at Will, and they can bring him on a blitz from Will. And he's a good blitzer. He's a guy who can get home, and he's got that. He's got very good burst, right? He's got to stay under control and he's got to make sure he doesn't overshoot his targets. But that burst is what makes him so appealing, and you can get that out of him by moving him around. So yeah, I am expecting him to be moved around. So maybe 50% is even a little bit high, but I think it's definitely going to be much, much lower than what we've seen out of Davis in the past, 4 years.
All right. Next group of questions are from Damone Hardy. It's good to hear from him again. First one, what influence do you believe Unland will have over the defense in terms of scheme, coverage, blitzing, et cetera?
I think the biggest impact that he's going to have is on the back seven. And I know that shouldn't be surprising because that's where his experience is, but that's where I'm expecting him to make the largest impact. One, the defensive schemes that he's coached in the past, you've seen flexibility and multiplicity. You've seen heavy man out of them. And that's ties in with what the Lions want to run in heavy man, but their secondary struggled last year and the pass rush was part of it, but they also just struggled together as they were anyways. Right. And so, yeah, there's a lot of ground that they can gain in the secondary. And I'm sure that was a huge appealing aspect of being able to bring him in. Now there's other aspects about Undlin that they really like, but what are we going to see in the biggest improvement? It's definitely going to be in that back seven. I think they will change up some of their coverage a little bit more. Lions were they were in man the most of any NFL team last year. I think Undlin's going to bring in some new perspective and allow them to disguise more. We're still going to see the same basic concept as far as scheme goes. You're still going to see a 3-3-5. You're still going to see alternating, the fifth defensive back is still going to alternate and something, how often they use the six is still going to alternate. But his biggest contributions are going to be fixing that back seven. Now, will he impact blitzing? I don't know. It's possible. I don't know how much he was involved in the decision to bring in Jamie Collins. It sounds more like that was a Matt Patricia thing, but the addition of Jamie Collins will allow them to be more blitz friendly. So I don't know if Unland's how much of a influence he's going to have over that, but the defensive scheme sure looks like it's more conducive to have an uptick in that blitzing aspect.
All right. His next question is, what type of influence do you believe Tyrone McKenzie will have in the linebacker room? How greatly will the linebacker play improve?
Well, I would think he's a guy who should be able to make big strides. When you look at what he did in his short time in Tennessee, they made some pretty big strides in what they were able to accomplish. And so it's not unheard of to expect the same type of up tick in production out of the Lions linebackers as well. Again, the flexibility that they have should allow them to be more fluid, and he has experience with that. You know, he's been just an inside linebackers coach. He's had experience with working with outside linebackers as well, but he has NFL experience, and that goes a long way with these players. These players will listen to coaches, especially one that will be as, you know, in their face and as, you know, physically demanding, and will be doing the exercises with them. Those types of coaches get a lot out of their players.
All right. How greatly will the addition of Collins help guys like Tavai, Jared Davis, and even Jalen Reeves-Maybin?
I think it's a massive help for Tavai. Jared Davis is going to have to prove it, but he's going to have to prove it on his own. The addition of Collins probably allows Davis to be more be put in more situations where he's been more successful in the past. For example, blitzing, right? He's been successful there. The addition of Collins allows him to be able to do that more frequently. I don't know about Jalen Reeves-Maybin.
Well, that rolls into his next question. Why doesn't Jalen Reeves-Maybin get more snaps on defense? I do have a little – I do have a stat that backs up why he's not out there.
Oh, tell me. Yeah, please.
Last season, although small sample size, he was targeted 19 times with 15 completions for 211 yards and 2 touchdowns. He surrendered a rating of 148 when he was on the field in pass coverage.
Yeah, that's not great, especially when that was his biggest asset on defense going into it. Obviously, he makes the team because he's a special team demon, but the production hasn't always been there. For whatever reason, they only seem to use him in like a lot of goal line sets last year, which is a real disadvantage to him, which is probably one of the reasons why he was able to allow the frequency and completions. But he doesn't do the things that linebackers need to be successful in this scheme. Okay. He's a good chase player, right? Like, he's a guy who can see the ball, get the ball. Jared Davis is the same way. See the ball, get the ball. But the difference between Jared Davis and Jalen Reeves-Maybin is that Jared Davis can take on a block from an offensive lineman, shed it, and get the ball. Jalen Reeves-Maybin, if he gets caught by the offensive lineman, he's done. And that has been the biggest hangup. I think if Reeves-Maybin was in a 4-3, you'd see a lot more success out of him. He's not really built for this scheme just because he doesn't take on blocks. That's why when he watched him last year, they were putting him on like the edge where he wasn't having to take on the different offensive linemen. They put him far enough out where he could, you know, cover a back going into the flat or a tight end going in the flat or something. When you ask him to take on blocks, it's just not his strong suit, and that's why he's a little bit going to be further down the depth chart and why he doesn't get as much time.
All right, switching over to Eric J. Mawson. The Lions have signed a lot of free agents with NFL experience. Having former Patriots makes learning faster, can get quicker, potentially a better start to the season. With the COVID situation, is it maybe better to have more experience than rookies for this upcoming year?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a big advantage to having veterans this time of year. With the situation being what it is in the world, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for veterans that maybe wouldn't normally make the team over an upside rookie. They'll get a better shot because they know what it takes to come in, week out. You know, we've often seen rookies hit that rookie wall, like in week 8, 10, 11, right? You don't get that from the veterans. And so there's long-term value in them. They know how to prepare for games. They're not going to make mistakes as frequently. And while they might not have the higher upside, they're going to have a higher floor. And coaches will lean towards those higher floor guys more than they will some of these upside rookies. So, yeah, I think if you were drafted, you got a much better shot than the undrafted guys. And typically, undrafted guys make this team based on their upside and their ability to contribute on special teams. I don't know if that's going to be as true this year. I like the guys they took in the first six rounds, right? Well, if he can get in there yet, there's potential for him yet to make the roster for sure. Mm-hmm. But him and the undrafted guys, it's a much harder road for them, especially the way that this roster was constructed with the veterans. There's a real advantage to being able to have a guy who's been there.
All right, next question's from Kevin Washington, Lions Breakdown. You guys are still the number one Lions podcast with everyone else a distant second. That's very sweet of them. I was wondering if you guys could break down how Trufant fits with our defensive scheme.
Yeah, he's basically, I think he's going to step into the Darius Slay role, right? Which is, you're looking for a speed shadow who can cover guys at different points on the field, match up with your one-on-ones, and kind of hold the fort down while Okuda gets his feet wet. It's very possible Okuda comes right out of the gate and, steals the show and takes the number one corner spot, and Trufant becomes that reliable number two who is matching up against speed guys and not worrying about shadowing as much. But in my mind, he's going to have to be that number one, or he'll be expected to be that number one while Okuda acclimates. Because as we've talked about, you know, every week since we drafted Okuda, he's going to have rough spots. And this is a veteran that's been around for a long time that can still burn it. And he can go out there and be your CB1, at least for the majority of the 2020 season.
All right, next question comes from BZ Ski. Are people underestimating Amani Oruwariye this upcoming season? He looked really good at the end of last season with two interceptions and three pass breakups and really only seeing time the last seven games. Also, just because he is still a free agent, if Jadeveon Clowney was in 2020, if he was available in the 2020 draft, would he have went over Chase Young, in your opinion? All right, quite a combo of questions. A lot to bite off there.
Let me take the Oruwariye point first. You paid Desmond Trufant basically $10 million a year. He has a $7.3 million cap hit this year. You paid him to come in and be a starter. You drafted Jeff Okuda to be a starter. Oruwariye, the best that he can hope for this year is to be number three, and I think that's where most people have him. So I don't think he's necessarily underrated, because this is a fifth-round pick who only played a handful of snaps last year. And while he did look good, I don't think you can expect him to start, especially when you put the investment into Trufant and Okuda to come in and take over those roles. So I don't think he's being overlooked. I think there's a long-term plan for him, and if they can get him into a starting role in 2 years, awesome. I think the potential's there, that's for sure, but I don't think he's ready to come in and start. Now, I'm saying this talking about the regular season. I wouldn't be surprised if Oruwariye opened camp as the starter while Okuda acclimates, or maybe even Daryl Roberts opens as the starter because, again, he's a veteran. But I'm expecting Oruwariye to probably get starter reps and some practice in training camp, and it's going to be headlines, and people are going to want to talk about how, you know, is he rising up and can he beat out Trufant? I just don't think he's going to be there when the regular season starts. I think he's going to be a great number three, and he's still going to get plenty of playing time in that spot. And but I don't think we're necessarily sleeping on him. Do you want to take the Clowney question over? Would he go over Chase Young? Yeah. I have my feelings on it.
Would he? Well, I would say he wouldn't go ahead of Chase Young because Chase Young is younger. I know there's a little injured. Bit of a pun there. Yeah, but if they were the same age, well, I don't know. Then I guess you go with Jadeveon Clowney. But yeah, I would always go for the younger player that has like the brighter future ahead of him. If it was just for this year, do I expect to be a contender this year? And mm-hmm. I need a draft based off of, you know, what we plan on doing this year. Well, then I guess I take Clowney.
So there's three factors. You mentioned one of them. Chase Young is much younger. 2, Clowney's been injured. And then 3, it's price tag. The price you're paying the number one pick versus the price you're going to pay Jadeveon Clowney is probably a difference of like $15 million, you know? So, yeah, while he's a talented player, and you could argue he would be, if he was still younger, he would have been in the conversation. Yeah, I agree with that. But Jadeveon Clowney now versus when he was the number one pick are two vastly different players with two vastly different price tags. And I'm not sure you can necessarily compare them.
All right. Next question's from Dustin Whitehead. Based off of production, is Tracy Walker the most overrated Lions player? Seems to be getting a ton of unnecessary pub for a guy who hasn't proven to be great at anything. Some fans are saying he's the Lions' best defender. That just seems ridiculous to me. Uh-oh, Eric. I don't think you like this question one bit.
I feel attacked. So let me clarify this with a couple of things. One, I don't think Tracy Walker is the Lions' best defender. I think Trey Flowers is. I think Tracy Walker's the second best defender, though, and I'm not going to be shy about that either. I do think a lot of the I will take some credit for hyping Tracy Walker. Now I know not everyone reads my stuff or listens to us, and so they develop their own opinions on how good he is or isn't. But what I see in Tracy Walker is an ascending talent that hasn't reached his full potential for a variety of reasons. One, he's only in the second year and he's coming out of a Louisiana, right? He's a small school guy who took a while to acclimate as a rookie. I thought he played exceptional as a second year player, but he also was playing out of position a lot of the times because they didn't have a true center fielder and he had to cover for them. The fact that he was able to cover for them shows his range. I think we're going to see more of what he can do at his best this year. And we should see his ceiling rise even more. When you look at Tracy Walker and you want to compare, is he a good player or is he not? Is he overrated or is he underrated? You have to look beyond what he did on the stat sheet. On the stat sheet, he's got, 100 tackles, 103 or whatever it was.
103 tackles, 13 missed tackles for a missed tackle percentage of 11.2, which was lower than Jared Davis last season. He was torched a little bit. He was targeted 57 times for 37 completions. That's for 535 yards and 5 touchdowns. The reverse quarterback rating of 117.2.
Yeah, I mean the whole secondary was torched last year, right? I
haven't seen very good numbers yet.
Yeah, he was actually one of the better ones, if I'm not mistaken. Still not great numbers as far from a coverage standpoint. But again, you were asking him to do more than you're going to be asking him to do this year. But he has the positional range to do that. He has the ability to cover tight ends. He has the ability to cover running backs. He has the ability to cover slot receivers. He can drop deep. He can be in zone. He can hit like a safety or like a linebacker. But he moves like a safety. There's so many different things that he has from a potential standpoint that when you wrap them all into one package, it's a rare package that, you know, you'll see throughout the league on a handful of different teams, but you're not, it's hard to find it in like one player. Like if you look at the other players on this roster, I'm not sure any of them have the positional range that Tracy Walker does. And a lot of them have multiple spots that they can go to and multiple things that they can do, but Walker can play from slot to slot and anywhere in between. He can line up deep. He can line up at the line of scrimmage. That's a huge area that you can utilize him in different spots, and you don't have to change your approach to a different play, and you can change your scheme on that play without having to change your personnel, and he allows you to do that. So I don't think Tracy Walker is overrated. And if you do, that's fine. We can agree to disagree on that. But for me, it's all about, when I watch him, you can just see the raw talent that he has, and you can just see the potential and the range, and he starts making plays that he really should have no business in making, and they might not show up in the stat sheet, but these things are starting to occur more frequently. The more he gets put in the spot where he can be best utilized, the more those splash plays are going to stand out, and I think the more impressed people will be of what he can become or maybe what you think he is. In my opinion, the Joker is one of the toughest spots in this scheme, and he's an ideal player for it.
All right, Scott Williams asks, can you give me one reason to believe the national media when they say Detroit's defense will not be any good? I think the team is the best it's been in years. Thanks.
Oof. Well, I could give a couple of reasons. I mean,
Might struggle rushing the passer.
Yeah.
Still will struggle giving up yardage in the secondary.
And there's a lot of questions, right? There's a lot of – we don't know – what they can actually do. On paper, this team is better, I believe. And on paper, they have more range and they look like they have more flexibility, but you have to do it. You know, they're not going to get any credit until they start proving that they can do it. And, you know, they might not get that a month into the season. They still might not be getting it. Even if they, you know, are 4-0, they still might not get that recognition. So I don't know if we're going to change the national media's perspective by anything that we say. It's when you're coming off a bad season, that's what the national perspective is going to be. It's going to be down on the team. So if you don't like it, click over to Lions Wire. I'll have something for you.
B. Curtis 1 asks, what does the rest of the NFL community think of Bevel? I was skeptical of the Lions hiring him, but after what I saw from him last year, and if the offense performs in the top five, could he get head coaching considerations?
That's an interesting question. I think the perspective has definitely changed, because when he was hired, everyone said, oh my gosh, he's not been in the league for a year. Yep. He had the Super Bowl gaffe, wasn't really – it was a collection of errors on that, but there was this perspective that, you know, it was a reach. And now, after seeing what Matthew Stafford accomplished in 8 games, and then when he was gone and how Bevel was still able to make this team passable, I think the perspective changed on him. There, you're starting to see more articles coming out from national people or just analysts in general who are starting to say, man, Bevel and Stafford together were really good over those first 8 games. And if Stafford's healthy, man, they could be something to watch next year. So I do think the national perspective has spun in a positive direction. And I think that's warranted. I think what they did in those first 8 games was impressive. And from a coaching standpoint, what he did in the last 8 games was equally impressive to me, because he was playing with the B and the C team there, and he's still able to produce up until those last couple of weeks.
All right, Tim from Germany has a bevy of questions. First one, who could be the biggest surprise of the season? I'm guessing on the team.
Yeah, do you have I want you to think about an opinion on that one. It's a good question, because you know, it's hard to really say, like, you're just guessing, right? I mean, you're saying,
well, yeah, okay, but it's fun to guess. Mm-hmm. Somebody might hold us to this down the line, but I'll say, let's hope the biggest surprise is Kerryon Johnson, that he has this massive 1400 yard season.
I'm going to stick with the guy that I picked last week as who could be the most impactful second year player. And I think Tobias is going to be the guy that surprises people.
That's your guy. There's a Walker.
there's a lot of people that are down on Tavai. And so if you're down on Tavai, Jamie Collins, I think, can help him out quite a bit. What I saw him do in camps were just, it was so good. I'm just waiting for them to uncork that Tavai. And if they do, I think it's going to change a lot of people's mind.
All right, Tim's most important question. Will Matthew Stafford win the Super Bowl on his birthday? Sadly, the answer is no.
Well, his birthday is February 7th. And that's when the Super Bowl is this year. So that's tentative. Tim, right? man, it would be nice. I will abstain from answering a yes or no. But yeah, I think it would be really hard. I think it would be really hard to do that. But you never know. Hey, you know, in 4 years, does it come back to February 7th again? You know, so we'll see. Yeah, I'd have to look in the future and kind of see. Maybe a couple years down the road, it's back on February 7th again in the Super Bowl. And maybe that's a possibility. Oh, it wouldn't be four. It'd be like 6 years. Ooh, then we're starting to get close. So I don't know. It's maybe. Yeah, I'm starting to leave more no now. But
yeah, well, yeah. Odds are against them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And finally, Tim's last question. I would like to know how you became fans of the Lions and how the idea of the Lions Breakdown podcast was born. Were you missing this kind of format, or have you been asked?
Well, you want me to take this part, or you want to take this part?
Well, mine's pretty straightforward. You know, born and raised in the area and having a dad and uncles that were, you know, reluctant fans of this team. And, you know, because like when I first started watching football, I think like the first football game I remember watching clearly is Oilers Bills, the massive Frank Reich comeback in the divisional playoffs.
Right.
And then I was all in on the Lions the next season. And, you know, quite simply, they had Barry Sanders on the team and, you know, it all just made sense, you know, and I've been suffering ever since.
For me, I didn't start watching football for when I was younger because I played other sports. And I still watched a bit of college, and I was fascinated with how players transitioned from college to the pros, and it just kind of built from there for me. So It didn't start out watching pros. I started out watching college, and then it just kind of expanded from there for me. Now, the podcast, how that evolved was interesting. I just started writing, and I don't know, I'd been writing like a year or so, and I had been a guest on a couple different podcasts, and I was speculating on doing my own, but I had no confidence that I could do it on my own, or I felt like I needed a partner that could keep me in check and someone who was knowledgeable. And my wife said, well, why don't you ask Joe? And I said, Joe's too busy. There's no way Joe would do it. So I didn't bother to ask you. But then my wife, as glorious as she is, decided to ask Joe for me. And Joe was all aboard. And from there, we had, a couple months worth of meetings where you'd come over and have some dinner, and we'd talk about what our approach would be, everything from what day of the week we wanted to do it on. Then we started building, we built the website, then we built the online presence, and we originally scaled the design around some of the previous podcasts I had been on. There was a podcast called Detroit Lions Radio, and I'd been on theirs a couple of times, and they were leaving. And when they were shutting their podcast down, I said, man, this is a great format that's not going to be here anymore. And this is an opportunity for us to do something similar. And since then, we've molded it into our own voice over the last
160 weeks later.
Right. And that's kind of where it went from there. This was just something that we said, hey, that we could have some fun doing this. And you know, we've known Joe and I, we've known each other for 15 years, I feel like.
Well, at the very least. Yeah. Right. It's probably been 15, 16 years, somewhere in there.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've known each other long enough where you're not shy telling me when I'm wrong. And that's great. I need that. I need to be able to be kept in check. And you've got a vast knowledge of Lions history and a lot of good opinions that vary from mine. And so I think there's a nice, we're able to have a nice chemistry here.
Yeah, no, it's been very refreshing. Lo, these last three plus years.
Yeah,
time's flying by. Even though time always seems like it's going incredibly slow, it is flying by. All right, we'll go to Alan Perlstein's question next. What position groups do you think the Lions will populate with an extra player or two on the roster, and what groups will they be short on depth, if any?
So I'm going to say the one position group that we talked about previously that they may purposefully be short on depth would be offensive line. It's very possible that they go into this season with only eight because of the promoting the practice squad guy rules. So I could see them purposefully being short there. From a talent perspective, the defensive line is still a little bit questionable to me because there's a lot of unproven guys on it. So that's a spot where I think I'm hoping to see them take some nice steps forward. As far as, where will they have more guys than they, more talent than they can use, I think running back makes a lot of sense. I think they're going to keep five guys, that's more, one more than they should, or than most teams do, I guess. And that's because I think those five guys can all have roles. So I think running back is a spot where they have a ton of talent. And safety. I think safety, they have a ton of talent on as well. So those are the spots I think they're kind of overloaded, where they're going to have some tough cuts to make and may even keep an extra guy or two.
Are you going to skip down to Ryan Haggerty's question? Do you think the Lions will target another free agent this offseason since they have cap space? If so, at what position? Kind of mentioned Mike Daniels already, so you would assume somewhere along the defensive line.
Yeah, look what I just said, right? I think the defensive line is potentially a weak spot where they could use some more depth, especially at a veteran. And like you said, Mike Daniels makes a lot of sense. So I would expect that to be a marriage that could come true. Come August.
Gloria's daughter asks, how will Detroit's inability to train at facility going to affect our offseason in comparison to other teams?
Okay, so if the state allows it, teams can start opening up their facilities to players. But in order to keep things fair, they're not allowed to do any coaching on the grounds, which means that players can only come in to work out and to meet with trainers in order to keep their bodies healthy, get on regimens, and they can, they eat food there and all this jazz, but they can't do meetings. That still has to be done virtually. And it has to be done virtually until all 32 teams are allowed to have everyone in the building at the same time. Now, with the Lions, they're supposed to have two more weeks, according to the governor. They should have two more weeks before the coaches would be allowed in the building. So technically that could mean the whole NFL doesn't get coaching for the next couple of weeks. But then today, Adam Schefter tweeted out that the commissioner thinks it could be as soon as next week that the governors make allowances for NFL sports teams to come into their facilities early, and it's very possible that all the coaches are in facilities as early as next week. So I don't think there's a huge disadvantage because, everybody's in the same boat a lot. The big disadvantage that they're losing is if you have a guy who's needing to rehab because he's coming off of an injury, like let's say Kenny Wiggins, or, maybe one of these guys that ended up on IR like Hockenson or Marvin Jones or Matt Stafford, that's a disadvantage for that. But it's really just health. Like they can get a lot of that over the phone, just like a lot of us do. Like they can have Zoom meetings with the trainers and they can get on regiments and they can get assignments and they can have to do, there's things that they can do, but there's no schematic advantage right now. And the league's doing that purposefully, but it might all be done with in relative future anyway, in the near future anyways, because if the NFL or if the NFL's working with governors right now, you never know what can happen.
All right, next up, Kyle's question. This might be a long one. How does rollover cap space work? Does all the unused cap space roll over, or just a percentage of it? We'll start with that.
They can roll over as much as they want. Okay. Like if they right now, the Lions have roughly 25 million, just under 25 million in cap space. If they want, if they don't use a penny of that through the whole season, they could take every penny of it and roll it over into the next year's cap. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen because you're going to need to put guys on IR and you're going to need to sign other guys and maybe sign a Mike Daniels. And so that number is going to go down. But, yeah, they can take as much of it as they want and roll it over.
All right. So it's curious about how that factors into the team's roster moves and contract planning. So we'll roll that into 517 Bulldogs question. Do you think the uncertainty of the season and minimal offseason that pushes contract extensions out further and possibly going against Bob Quinn's trend, allowing some getting done during the regular season? You've mentioned, you have an article out there that's mentioning that the contract talks with Taylor Decker have begun in earnest. Is it, wait, or was that a Twitter? Is that, was Twitter, or was an article? One or the other.
I wrote an article.
So it looks like they're trying to, you know, start working on extensions, even though we are, nothing's going on.
Yeah, I think the preliminary talks this time of year are is common, and I think they want to save, they want to be able to keep things as normal as they possibly can with the anticipation. They have to operate as if the season's going to happen. And if the season's going to happen, then you have to, you want to go through the same motions and make the same decisions that you would always make. And that would mean that you're targeting your key players like Taylor Decker and Kenny Golladay and Matt Prater. And you're going to say, hey, these are guys in the last year of their contract. I might need to get them an extension in camp this year so that I can keep them because they're part of the core foundation of what we want to do. Yeah, there's a lot of that's all part of Bob Quinn's overall game plan. As far as longevity, he wants to be able to schedule these contracts and do like maybe three in camp and keep them so that every year he's got a couple more so that he's not walking into an off season with like six major contracts that he has to deal with. And then he's going to lose, you know, multiple guys. He doesn't want to do that. So what you'll see then with the contract structuring, if we go back to Kyle's question, is that they will create differentials in cap hit depending on the year as well. So a player might have like a $15 million cap hit 1 year, and then the following it's only five, and then the following it's like 12. Well, the reason that they might want a five is because they know that they're going to have to sign some free agents and they want some extra cap room that year. So they're always going to be planning these contracts about 3 years out. So when they're looking at the team, they're looking at it this year and saying, okay, where are we at? But they're also looking at next year and the year after by when they are organizing these contracts, because they want to know where they're going to need cap space and when. So if the Lions think they're going to need more cap space next year, then they might want to hold on to as much as that $25 million as they can so that they can roll that over and use it then. This year they rolled over 18, right? And so now they've been able to expand that a little bit more. And I think that's part of the plan, is he wants to be able to create more cap room as they go, which gives them flexibility to, if a Mike Daniels comes up late in a training camp, and they can just go out and get them and they don't have to worry about that. If you want to be able to give a big extension to your quarterback, you can do that. If you want to, you know, give a big contract to Kenny Golladay, you can do that. You got, think about how many years under Mayhew and before him with LaWand and how they were unable to sign anybody that they wanted because they were just in such cap purgatory. And they couldn't make the roster moves that they needed because they didn't have the cap space. Well, Quinn has made a series of moves in order to create this cap space so that he can target guys that he wants rather than just being at the mercy of the cap space.
Yeah, well, and in fact, it's rough saying this. in fairness to LeJuand and Mayhew, they have the old rookie salary.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
salary structure to deal with. And when they picked 2-1 and 2 in three consecutive years, that really worked against them under the old system.
Yeah, but they misplayed.
Oh, yeah, they were terrible. We don't have to get into all that. They were really bad.
Okay.
Tyler Davis, I think I can handle this one, Eric, because I know the answer. Regardless of this season's outcome, do you see Patricia and his staff being given an extra season due to the unforeseen circumstances due to the COVID-19 virus? The answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
They have a built-in excuse for whatever goes wrong.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. I think that's very possible that they do get some leniency because of the COVID situation. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think next question is yours, too.
Yeah, it's from Jimmy. It's for Joe. Besides injuries, COVID, and the so-called curse, why are you pessimistic about the upcoming season for the Lions, or are you optimistic, and why? Well, you know, a little portion of me always has to be optimistic, because if I'm only going to be pessimistic, I should probably never turn on the TV. But the pessimism, it still remains. Last season, the team had 28 sacks, and we talked about the additions they made. But does that get us to be a team with 40 sacks? Probably not. You know, maybe it gets us in the 32, 33 range, which, you know, we're not going to be generating a great pass rush. We're going to be breaking in Jeff Okuda, which hopefully works out great. I'm optimistic about what his future can be. But at the same time, you know, he's going to have a rough start in all likelihood, because most of these guys do. And the other scary thing is Trufant. Is he on the downside of his career, where we're going to see him turn into a sieve, you know, overnight? And, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. But, you know, he came here. And my biggest fear on the offensive side of the ball, although the team did very well with Bevel and Stafford through 8 games, they had, 5 games where they scored more than 27 points or more, which is good. That puts you in a good position to win most weeks in the NFL. Obviously, they only won 3 times in that span. But, you know, that's neither here nor there, since we're going into next season. But the balance to the offense wasn't there yet. They actually were more balanced as the season wore on after they lost Matthew Stafford, but that's mostly because they had no choice. Right. But we need to see more progress from the running game. Now, they did invest in the running game by adding DeAndre Swift at the beginning of the second round, and by spending a bunch of money on an offensive tackle who doesn't have much experience, but at the same time, a lot of scouts really liked him. So, you know, that one could go either way. I said on the pessimistic side, do we pay him too much money for not knowing what we're getting? And the optimistic side is, well, he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on him, and he might be really good. And I do like that they added a couple of offensive guards in the middle rounds, but we still might have to wait a year or two before we see return on that investment. So there's a lot of questions going into the season. And don't forget, they're 3-12-1. So even a big turnaround is only gets you to 7-9. You know, that's winning 3.5 more games than you did the season before, you double your win total. So I'm pessimistic, but hey, anything can happen, and 12-4 could be right around the corner.
Yeah, it's the NFL. Anything can happen.
Finally, Josh Sullivan, are we, the Lions, going to fix the Calvin Johnson situation this year? And it doesn't look like it.
No, with this COVID stuff and the potential fallout of social distancing and whatnot, I think it would be hard pressed to say it gets handled for sure.
Yeah, there's no contact at all, and there's no real reason for the Lions to like blow in a call to him saying, hey, like, you know, we want you to come up for week 5, you know, and and, you know, we'll bring you out at halftime, and, you know, none of that's likely to happen. So
probably not this year. Yeah, it gets tough.
All right. So that's it for the questions. We did skip a couple of questions, but I know we'll hit those questions as the weeks wear on, because I think it's a little early to hit a couple of them.
Okay.
All right. So let's go to the shout outs.
We got another nice bump, another 5 reviews, 2 written, from BRay313 and Doug the Lion. And so they wrote some nice reviews about us. Doug did mention we were having a staticky thing in the last couple of podcasts. Yeah, I just want to let people know we're working on it. We hopefully made that adjustment today to try and fix that. You know, with this, with us having to do this virtually, it gets trickier. And the service that we're using today, we won't be able to use next time. And so it's going to get trickier again. So we're doing our best to try and
settle make
things
out.
Work. Yeah, it's still real tricky. Unfortunately, it's something that we weren't able to do for 2.5 years. And then all of a sudden we were like forced to figure it out. And so I think we have a handle on it. We have some more options that we're going to be approaching to try and improve everything. We want to get you the best quality that we can. So hopefully
this week sounds a little better.
Yep. And, you know, I also want to address the fact that we still have a lot of Patreon subscribers, and there was a bit of a fall off after the draft, and that's not unexpected. And being in the environment that it is, I'm not surprised. I am surprised that there's still quite a few people that are contributing to us.
Yeah, and it's very cool. Although you probably just reminded them, Eric, that they're contributing and they got to stop.
But that's fine. I mean, if they need to.
Understand.
No. Yeah, absolutely. This is a tough environment. And if people, we're coming up at the, where Patreon's going to recycle through for payments again. And if they need to take months off there or retire that, that's fine. I mean, we understand it's a tough spot, but we're using this money to try and get better equipment to increase that sound quality. We may have to pay for a video service so that we can record, because I know they have a lot of cool video and audio virtual services that you can use to communicate, but not all of them allow you to record. And if you want to record, you have to pay. And so we're going to try and put money towards these things as well to keep it, you know, make sure that we can still get you the podcasts, even when Joe and I can't be in the same room as each other. So we're going to keep trying to make those things work so that we can keep getting you the best show possible.
Yeah. So just bear with us. You know, we're not perfect at this. We're figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. And I've had a couple guys that are better at this than me, and they've given me some advice, and it's helped. And so we're just a couple sports guys, you know. We're not tech wizards, and so we got to figure out all this. It's more complicated than I ever thought it would be to get these up. So I'm glad that we're able to produce these on a weekly basis, and that we'll continue to produce them as frequently as we can.
Yeah, so hey, we really appreciate everybody listening. We really appreciate the reviews. We're doing great there. We really appreciate all our Patreon subscribers. We appreciate everybody who listens. It's great. It's been great to be bringing it to you for the last 3+ years now, and hopefully for many more years in the future. But let's not worry about that right now.
All right.
And we'll see you. Hopefully you'll hear it. You will hear from us again next week. And until that time, let's go Lions.